You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm recording this with Alex Hooper from 92.2 Through the Fan. Alex, what's going on?
You're looking at it, man. Just another game against a lowly opponent where you give up 120 points, but the Brooklyn pick played well tonight.
Yeah, the Brooklyn pick did very well. The Cavs bumped that down in the standings a little bit. But on today's show, we are going to recap the Cavs' win over the Brooklyn Nets. That's a 129-123 win. LeBron James has his 12th triple-double of the season. George Hill scores a season-high 26 points. Kyle Korver has 18. Rodney Hood, 14 points, 11 in the fourth quarter. D'Angelo Russell, the Ohio State product, leads the Nets with 25. And almost Ohio Bobcat, Caris LeVert, has 18. I'm obligated to mention that. It's in my degree, and it's in the footnotes. If you hear any background noise, Alex and I are recording at the queue, so there are people cleaning up right now. There are people dribbling on the court. So if you hear some background noise, that's what it is. I did it the other day. Hopefully it doesn't come out too bad for you. But we're going to start with, I think, the probably the most important performance of the night. We'll get LeBron's history, we'll get to later, but George Hill, best game as a Cav, world's better than he played on Sunday. Alex, what to you stood out in George Hill's 26-point, 3-4 from 3, 5 assist performance?
I mean, it's kind of simple, but Ty talked about how he encouraged George to step into his jumper a little more, a little earlier, and be more aggressive. I mean, that's kind of his note to the new guys, is be more aggressive. Like, you are a part of this team now, go out there and play your game and be aggressive. And George was aggressive from the get-go, and especially in that third quarter, he just started hitting shots. I mean, it always annoys me to a degree where we go into that locker room and everyone's like, what happened? What was wrong? Why did you guys lose? And they say, we just missed shots.
Well, and it's also crazy for us as reporters and people that are trying to, like, engage in a conversation to be like, so what happened in X play and the, like, diagram? And it's, like, really hard for them to... As hard as it is for us, it's easier for us because we're taking notes and, like, thinking about this all game when they're in the moment and not really taking time to process this.
Right. And then you have to turn around and be like, all right, guys, well, this is what we were told, is they just missed shots. And it obviously makes sense. I mean, it actually does explain things. It's not like shooting a projectile into a tiny, relatively speaking, hoop is some exact science. There's obviously plenty of physics to it, but I mean, he hit shots. He was aggressive. Rodney Hood was aggressive. I know we'll talk about him, but it's just the guys were more, I guess, assimilated into the offense. They were more themselves. George did what George does. He got into that corner right in front of the Cavs bench in the third quarter, and he put him up and he hit him. And it was much needed. If you're going to give up 123 points, there are a lot of reasons that happened, but this team is still going to need to be one that outguns the opposition. They are going to need to outscore them more than outdefend, because that's just not who they are, and George was able to do that tonight.
I think the thing with George that I think you're right is the aggression. He was pushing the ball coast to coast. He was getting to the rim and trying to make decisions and make flutters. He missed a couple shots, and this could have been a 30-point night for him if just a couple shots fall his way. I think the three-point shooting in particular was big. He was a really, really good three-point shooter for his career, and coming in from the Kings, has not really shot well from three, but he hit these couple tonight. It seemed to settle him a little bit, and he's making the shots that they're asking him to now. Is he going to go 3 or 4 every night? No, but I think when he does that, that was huge. And I also want to point out what I think for me was the biggest play of his night. We're going to talk about Hood, but after Hood hits the go-ahead shot and gets the and-one, the Nets, it's 40.2 seconds left. The Nets decide not to take a timeout. I think they only had one left, and they used it later. But they decide to just have D'Angelo Russell push the ball up the floor. What ends up happening is they run a pick-and-roll, I think with Dante Cunningham and D'Angelo Russell against Nance and Hill. George Hill absolutely smothered D'Angelo Russell into the corner. It forces an errant pass. It's a turnover for the Cavs. LeBron gets the ball, makes two free throws after the Nets foul him. That's just the game. George Hill, great offensive night. They've needed that from him. But his defense, the long 7-foot wingspan that we've heard so much about, ended up being the clinching play, right in tandem with Rodney Hood.
And that was what really excited me about, and George Hill is literally at my 12 o'clock down in the tunnel.
Very subtle fashion. Like, a lot of guys in the Cavs are wearing, like, you know, designer stuff or, like, Supreme. George Hill, basically a Cavs sweatsuit.
And earth tones. He's rocking that. I like that brown hat.
Yeah.
I dig it. But I dug his defense, and that was what really excited me. I mean, imagine this, Chris. A Cavs point guard who is very good defensively.
And isn't no offense to Matthew Dellavedova, but isn't good at just playing defense because he works hard.
Right.
Like, this is a guy that has the physical tools in addition to the effort levels and the physicality to do stuff. Like, no offense to Delly, but like, he doesn't have that wingspan to smother a guard that's a bigger guard like D'Angelo Russell in the corner. Like, he may body him and bump him, but Hill has the size to smother him in that corner and force that pass.
In soccer, we would say he is technically gifted. He is that defensively. He had 3 steals tonight, and just thinking about it now, remember that play in the third quarter where they're down in the corner, the Nets are down in that same corner that Hill made that stop in the fourth. He batted away, I can't remember who it was passing who, because it happened in an instant, but he had like almost tapped it away, grabbed it, almost turned it over, and then recovered to actually lock down the possession, and it was during a Cavs run, and it's that effort, it's that intensity, it's just all the things. I know, like, a lot of cliches here, but he's that guy. He does all the things that coaches love, and his energy, his impact was felt to a very high degree tonight, and it turned the game.
100% agree with that. They've needed that George Hill. I think they haven't had that Hill just yet. We haven't seen. I think this is by far his best performance as a Cav, and he looked more settled. And he still does some stuff where he tries to control his movement more than I think I realized. He's very calculated in some of his attacks to the rim, and I think that was. There's moments where he gets into the lane, and you can see him like kind of calculating and like pausing a moment. And it's really in my mind, because of how I've known him as this 3-and-D point guard, he has more control there than I thought. And tonight he was just much more careful with the ball. I mean, just the 5 assists, but looking at the box score, only 1 turnover.
Right.
Really careful performance from him in that way as well.
I really liked what you mentioned, kind of that hesitation and that. The thing I loved about watching Dwayne Wade for his, you know, 20-year tenure with the Cavaliers.
Yeah, lifetime Cavalier who is weirdly playing for the Heat now.
Yeah, he hit a
hitting,
big
hitting
shot.
Hitting game winners. And it was
I'm used to him doing that in the Wine and Gold.
Yeah, not the Heat jersey, never.
But the thing I love about Dwayne is just how slow he is on the block. Like, his footwork's impeccable, and it wasn't quite Dwayne Wade level, but the way George was able to operate in that pick and roll tonight with Larry Nance, who makes everyone look great in the pick and roll, but the way he was able to slow down and, you know, how you kind of hip check and make sure you, that split second where you decide whether to just kind of put it up on a floater or float it up to Larry for a dunk, it went both ways tonight, and again, it's a little thing, and it's not necessarily something that other guys in this position haven't done, but you see the wheels turning, and he's just very enjoyable to watch. I enjoyed watching him in the games where he didn't play this well, but he's just so technically sound. It's a lot of fun to watch.
I like that he played 37 minutes as well. I know you're going to want to get minutes for Clarkson, and they tonight with Jeff Green out, who was a late scratch due to some back soreness, I believe, he played 37 minutes. Still got Clarkson 21 because they played together. And I don't know if that's possible against every team, because the Nets kind of are playing Dinwiddie and Russell together, functionally two ones on the floor together, and playing Joe Harris, who's a smaller two. So, but I liked him playing that much. I think when he's at his best, he's just such a much better option for this roster. The other guy that stands out in this game is Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood, quiet. I mean, he's had a couple good games so far. Had the couple nice threes in the first time, the Cavs in his debut. And this game is quiet for 3 quarters. Was the hero of the fourth quarter in a lot of ways. This was a game where LeBron like was good in the fourth, but Rodney Hood's 11 points in the fourth, and in addition to what we talked about with George Hill, won this game for the Cavs. And Hood hits the game winner. He gets a switch onto Jared Allen. He goes on the baseline, fades away, gets fouled, makes it, hits the free throw, and then the Hill thing happens, and the Cavs win the game. And after the game, we saw Ty Lue talking about how he wants Hood to be aggressive. I think that's something that's going to become valuable. I think you saw in this game, he's not going to play him like this every night, but if he goes for that stuff, I think he can provide some secondary creation to the Cavs, even with George Hill playing well. I think they miss a guy like and need a guy like Rodney Hood.
And the funny thing was, is Hood was, I mean, he didn't hit a three. He had 14 points. He didn't hit a three. Yeah, that's not who you expect.
Yeah, because when he's gotten his bucket so far, it's been they run that play where he whips around, he comes off some screens, and he's at the top of the key, and he's getting – he basically gets to make a choice from the top of the key where he's either going to shoot or he's going to attack. Tonight was a lot of work inside. When he hit 4 points in a row in the fourth at one point, both just got inside, hit kind of shots off the glass. And the one he hit was on a switch, and he attacked an ISO and scored inside the paint.
And he
had
those,
in paint, but inside the three-point line.
He had those two really nice runouts off the dribble, which is not what you expect Rodney Hood to do. He had a nice pick and roll as a ball handler and attacked the rim, and it was just that aggression. He talked about it yesterday. Ty hinted at it yesterday, and then Ty talked about it again today. They want Rodney to be aggressive, and he was. And I didn't really expect him to be that adept putting the ball on the ground. I watched him a little bit at Utah while he's been in the league, and I still just saw the same kind of pull-up jump shooter that I saw at Duke and kind of what I expected from him coming out. But tonight he showed a different aspect. I didn't realize someone tweeted Rodney Hood ranked in the 81st percentile as the ball handler on pick-and-roll plays when he was with the Jazz. I did not know that. And I can totally see why after watching him tonight. I didn't get to watch him up close and personal the first week that he was in Cleveland, but I've been here these past two games, and I'm seeing where that's coming from. And I didn't realize that was a thing for Rodney Hood, but I can see why it would be. He's got that length.
Yeah.
And he should be able to score inside like that.
I think the other note on Hood that's worth noting is that this is a game where J.R. Smith played very badly again. Not quite as bad as the Spurs game, but J.R. Smith was always – the Cavs had a bad three-point shooting first quarter. They kind of put themselves in a hole. Did not have a great first half in general. J.R. was 0-3 from three in the first quarter. Had a finish – just played 22 minutes, 2-9 from the field, 0-3 from three. He had five boards, but didn't really have a really good game. 4 points for J.R. isn't a sign that his impact is not there. Rodney Hood earned his 31 minutes with his fourth quarter, with his aggression. I think just right now he offers in a vacuum just more than JR, and I think the way they're trending, I think Hood maybe should get a bump, and I don't know what that means for a possible starting role for Rodney Hood or how you readjust things in that kind of reality, but Hood earned – this is another thing where Hood earned his minutes, and I think tonight the through line with this, with Nance, with Hood, with Clarkson, I think having a solid 14 points off the bench and three assists, and Hill's big night. The new guys, in addition to LeBron, in addition to some a corner three here from Jetty and good minutes from Korver, the new guys really contributed in a way that J.R. Smith and to a lesser degree Tristan Thompson just didn't.
Have we come to a consensus yet about what is plaguing J.R.? I mean, obviously he's not hitting shots, which I know I lamented that whole thought process earlier, but I mean, do we know what is going on with him?
I mean, it could just be that he's just regressed. Like, I remember this is a guy that came out of high school. This isn't
right.
Someone that, he's not played the same minutes total LeBron has, but this is a 32-year-old who's made finals runs, who had injuries last year.
So is he year 15 as well?
I think he's a year. I think he's 14.
14?
I think he's a year. He's either a year or two after LeBron, so 13 or 14. I could just be that. I don't think, and look, the way the Cavs talk about some of this stuff, they're not gonna say this, like,
sure,
that, like, JR's not gonna do it, LeBron's not gonna do it, Ty Lue is certainly not gonna do it. They're gonna be understandably defensive of JR, but I think it could be the age, it could be, maybe it's shape, it's hard to really know. But he's not, he was right for a little bit after the trade, it seemed like, and in the last two games he's been pretty bad again, so I'm not sure. The other big point for me in this game, LeBron James.
Surprise.
Well, it's about LeBron, but like not about LeBron, because they survived to me when they sat. And I'm gonna, as we talk about this, I'll pull up the exact numbers. But fourth quarter, they kind of fell apart a little bit to start the fourth, and have some issues. But LeBron checks back in at the 7:02 mark of the fourth quarter.
Right after four straight. I think that was that the two Rodney Hood buckets right before he came in?
So looking at this right now, this is how it worked. Nance has a putback with 7:24 that I think ties the game.
Right, and then it was Clarkson.
Clarkson
right.
still gets the drives the basket, gets the bucket. Cavs go 103-101. Mm-hmm. Timeout gets called. LeBron comes in for George Hill. And then it ends up getting tied. And then that's when Hood has the four straight. And then it scores again with 636 and 614 for Hood. They survive without LeBron James. And if you go back to the second quarter, LeBron's not playing then as well either. They survive. Like, for the Cavs, it is so important for them to just float water without LeBron. And, again, the new guys get credit here. I think Kyle Korver gets some credit
right,
here. Very good second quarter for Kyle Korver, and we'll talk about him in a little bit. But Kevin Love will come back. That should help some of this as well. But what do you make of the second unit in this game, these non-LeBron units that are, I mean, just on paper, it's Clarkson, Hood, Nance, Korver, Jetty Osman to start there. The fourth quarter is Hill, Clarkson, Hood, Nance, Korver. These are not overly great defensive lineups. You don't even, I don't think they're not even necessarily great offensive lineups in some ways, but what do you make of them? It's the Nets, and that's the caveat, but what do you make of them being able to survive and ultimately kind of help LeBron win a game?
Well, I mean, first of all, going back to Korver, he played, 51 seconds in the first and then comes out in the second, hits 4 or 5 threes with LeBron off the floor.
So Kyle Korver, since the trade, he hit 9 threes in that game against the Hawks where no one played and they just had the skeleton crew and he played a lot and he shot a lot. Since then, he has not hit more than 2 threes in a game. I think the Clarkson's not great at looking for shooters. That has impacted things. He's someone that I think needs the structure to kind of get some of his best looks. That's what had him have success earlier this season. He has not had that really since the new guys came in. They're implementing all these new sets. Tonight was the closest they got to him getting off those shots, and he had his best night.
Yeah. So I think him coming out and actually hitting shots, obviously, that's going to skew the numbers. Or I don't know if you really want to look at it as skewing them because he's expected to do that. But the other thing is, again, Larry Antoinette pick and roll. I thought those lineups with Korver and Hood on the flanks with, Hill and Clarkson being used as the ball handler in a Larry Nance pick and roll, I thought those were brilliant. Obviously, like you said, George Hill is looking for those shooters a little more, but anytime Kyle Korver's on the floor, you have to tend to him. I think people feel similarly about Rodney Hood because he can hit, but he's not Kyle Korver. I think it just makes more sense. I think the guys on the floor make a more cohesive unit. I think they're more well-rounded. I think they can do more things. That being said, the sets are limited still. They're only running, like 3 different actions, I think. The main actions, I think, Mike Zavagno said on Twitter.
The great Mike Zavagno, you can find him on Twitter at mzavagno11. It's Zavagno, I believe. If I spell that wrong,
I had to DM him to make sure I was pronouncing his last name right, so I hope I actually...
Look, I butchered it on podcast because just like I mispronounced Jetty for a month, so people on Twitter...
I think everyone did.
Yeah, whatever. They're right. They're not running a lot of sets. They're running variations of things in you saw some of them start to run stuff for Korver tonight. They even had one that I liked that they did this. They ran it a little too fast. I think it was the second quarter. LeBron's coming. Yeah, it's going into the fourth. So LeBron comes down and they run a set where they were faking some action on the side. Korver's coming through a screen and it was 6.6 seconds left and it was a turnover. And the LeVert scores on the other end. I think they just rushed it a little bit, but I like that they went to this. Okay, now they're going to focus on LeBron, we're just going to get Kyle Korver and get him a shot. I like when they do that. I know there's limitations to it. I know there's probably he's going to have some defensive issues against some of the better teams in the playoffs, but I think that gives the Cavs just a useful thing. And I think more so than JR right now, more so than some of the other guys that are struggling, I like getting Kyle Korver going.
I think it's about as key. I mean, other than LeBron, I think if you get Kyle Korver going, you're in a better position than any other player on this team if he's in rhythm. He's a guy who everyone is so scared of. He could go 0 for 6, and opposing defenses are going to have to worry about him anytime he's on the floor. So if he hits 4 of 5 at the start of the second, it's going to open things up. And George Hill hit some shots that open things up. They were able to create because they finally made some shots, and I think that starts with Kyle Korver. I think if he doesn't necessarily get going early, then someone else has to. But when he does get going early, it can allow other people to get going early. I think anytime you can get him going, it's going to make your team so much better.
And he played with LeBron, too, which I think matters.
Always.
Always. He just fits better with what LeBron does. We'll wrap up the first half of this podcast up on this, but did you like the Jeff Green-less less rotation, where that was a little quicker, a little speedier, a little stretchier?
A little passier.
A little passier, didn't have the post-ups?
Oh, yeah. See,
I think it works better, but I mean, it's harder to go LeBron at the 4-5 then, but I think it's better.
I agree with you. I like Jeff.
He's a really nice guy.
As a person.
He's been the best dunker on the Cavs this year.
I enjoy some of the highlight reel stuff he does. I just don't love him as a high minutes guy. I don't love him as a primary option on an offensive set ever. I don't like him as a three-point shooter.
Yeah, I mean, teams just abandon him in three-point. But I think that it's something to be said that Jeff Green meant things flowed a little bit better with him not on the floor tonight. So that'll be the first half of this podcast. We'll come back, some smaller stuff from this game. In the meantime, here is Ty Lue. He had a very kind of lively presser. You'll hear his tone is a little bit better right now. Seems to be in a bit of better mood, but you'll hear his audio, his post-game press conference then. We'll be back.
Never.
How do you think that affected their play?
Just in the timeouts, just the last few games, we got to play through the officiating, you're going to get calls sometimes, sometimes you're not. It's just part of the game, and it's a tough game to officiate, especially with all the flopping the guys are doing, you know, how strong and powerful Bron is. So, you know, it's a tough game to officiate. We got to play through the officiating. We don't get calls. We got to get back on defense because other teams going down the floor, that's scoring the basketball. So, it happens. It's part of the game, and that's all I'm going to say.
Front row, Dave.
Dave McMenamin, ESPN. Ty, I wanted to know if you could rank the late shots by your new guys, the long jumper from Larry Nance Jr., the go-ahead three from Clarkson, and the and-one jumper from Hood.
Big shots. Like you said, then G. Hill made two big free throws at the end when he had missed three throughout the course of the game. So, you know, Rodney's three-point play, Clarkson's, you know, he just plays. You know, he probably thought it was first quarter. He's just ready to play, you know, and he just lives in the moment and, you know, he makes big shots. And it was a big shot he made tonight. And then, like you said, Larry Nance making a 15, 16-footer when we're down two. So they all play well down the stretch for us tonight.
Is that the silver lining to, you know, playing a tight game against a team that's 20 games under 500 to get those guys?
Well, I just want to see, you know, what I'm working with. I really don't know the guys, you know, that much, you know, that well. So just want to see, you know, in big moments, pressure situations, you know, how they perform. And they perform well, and they've been performing well. And, you know, with JR and Tristan had 13 rebounds tonight. And I just, you know, it's tough because they sit for so long, and you try to bring them back at the five-minute mark, close game. It's just too tough to ask those guys to sit and then come in and try to perform and produce. So, you know, we rolled it out. Those guys came up big for us, and it was a good win for us.
Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com. Ty, with about a minute left, you called timeout. You took out Nance Jr. You put in Jordan Clarkson. Obviously, he made the three right after that. But what went through your mind in terms of going to Jordan there as opposed to JR or maybe even Jetty or somebody else?
Because Jordan had been playing throughout the course of the fourth quarter, and JR came out I think 5 minutes ago in the third. So it wouldn't be fair to JR to bring him in the game and say, you know, be ready to make a big shot. And so Clarkson had been playing. We wanted to go small. We saw they were switching the pick and roll. So, you know, you put a point guard on LeBron with the floor space. If they help, you know, it resulted in a three-point shot for Clarkson. So good read, good pass, good find, a big shot.
LeBron mentioned in his post-game interview that you guys tried some new defensive coverages tonight. How much of that do you think contributed to giving up over?
You know, I thought our energy and effort was there. I thought they made some tough shots. I got to go back and watch it. But, you know, switching 1-5, which we haven't done a lot. We switch 1-4 usually. And they got behind us on the roll a few times. And we just got to clean it up and continue to keep working on it. But, you know, it got us back in the game in that first half. So it's something we can use, and we just got to get better at it, just continue to keep working on it.
Over to the left, Scott.
Scott Sarge, WFNY. Fourth quarter notwithstanding, did you get the level of aggressiveness that you wanted out of the new guys that you talked about previously?
I did, especially out of Rodney. I thought he needed to be more aggressive, more assertive. And, you know, we told him when he gets the rebound, push the basketball. One time he threw it back to LeBron, and it was good for LeBron on the bench to tell him, listen, my fault. When you get the rebound, I got to run. You got to push it. Be aggressive. And you see he got to the basket a few times, you know, got downhill, got to the basket. Mike got fouled a couple of times. They didn't call it. But just continue to keep being aggressive.
He's a professional, clearly. But does a fourth quarter like this kind of help a guy like Rodney, you know, ingratiate himself and give him the confidence going forward?
I think he's a confident player, but, you know, especially coming to a new team, you know, to be able to show you can step up in a pressure situation and make a big shot, that's big. And, you know, he's got to continue to get better, continue to pick up the sets, and you just need him to be aggressive.
Right side, Youngstown.
Ty, Ron Potesta, the Sports Animal 1390 in Youngstown. How close are these quartet of players from getting the system down
pat? We got a lot of work. You know, we got a lot of work ahead of us, but, you know, they're putting in the work every day. So, it's, you know, it's not like it's from a lack of work, but it's a lot of stuff when you're coming from a different team, a different situation. So, you know, it's going to take some time, and we understand that. And, you know, we just got to continue to keep learning on the fly, you know, keep putting stuff in and see what they pick up on and kind of go from there.
Spencer Davies, Basketball Insiders. Season at 26 for George tonight. I think he had like three steals or something like that. What allowed him to settle into the game so well tonight for you guys?
Just talking about before the game, I told him, you know, in their drop defense, the guy's all the way back at the dotted line, so you got to be able to, you know, come off, be aggressive, shoot your pull-up jump shot, you know, being aggressive. And I thought that set a tone for us early, him getting into his pocket, shooting his pull-up jump shot, and opening the game up for us. So we need him to be aggressive on pick and rolls, getting downhill, and making the right play.
Is he the only one on the team that you see that can play as well in the half court as well as transition? Like, is that something that he brings to the table that other guys might not?
I think other guys can do that as well.
Marla.
Marla Reitinger, Akron Beacon Journal. LeBron finished off a triple-double for February, and he's never done that in a month before. I don't know. I know he's done a lot, but where does that stand in your mind?
It gets better with time. You know, and, you know, he's had a great month. He's really done a good job of just carrying the team. You know, he was going through a tough stretch, and he stepped up. And he's, you know, he's really put the team on his back and his shoulders, and especially with these new guys, just showing them the way. And I think he's being very – showing those guys a lot of confidence and, you know, giving those guys a lot of confidence by talking to them, being positive. And it's good for our young team going forward.
Hey.
Another LeBron question for you. What does it mean to you to hear that he came tonight the first player in league history with 30,000 points, 8,000 rebounds, 8,000 assists?
Wow. A hell of an achievement. I mean, yeah. I mean, especially, you know, coming to a league, he's a, you know, pass first guy and unselfish, but to score 30,000 points, you know, in a league company. But to do all the other things he does and just shows he's a complete all-around player and probably one of the best our game has seen as far as all-around passing, dribbling, powerful, you know, shooting the basketball, scoring. So just a great player.
All right, so there was Ty Lue. At the end of this podcast, you'll hear Jordan Clarkson, who had a pretty funny post-game press conference. And Alex, one of the things I think we'll note, and you and I aren't at every game like some of the other reporters covering this team and in the locker room on the road and everything, but very jovial locker room, I think is the best way to put it. Everyone's kind of joking around a little bit, and it's not much doom and gloom. LeBron seems to be in a good mood. Things seem kind of positive. Even like they just seem kind of in a better place.
Yeah, LeBron's talking first, which doesn't always happen.
He's normally for inside basketball here, but he's like last all the time. Like,
usually.
Typically this year, he's been you wait around for LeBron. He takes his time. The only time I can remember before this week that he hasn't been last was when Isaiah Thomas went last.
Right.
Which was also weird.
That was a time.
Yeah.
But I think
it feels like forever ago.
I know. It was so funny. I knew that I was going to get to cover the beginning of the season, and then Daryl Ryder, Browns beat reporter, rotates when the season ends, and I kind of go back to doing all the other things that I do for our station. And I was like, I'm going to get to see up to Isaiah Thomas, and then I'm going to miss the rest of the year for the most part. And I actually missed Isaiah Thomas. So like, I got to see, I think, one game, which is probably enough for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, all I will say is there's a video you can – it's probably still on Cavs.com. He had a scrum that he did on a Saturday that is the most amazing – practice scrums are normally these very vanilla things. Like, LeBron will say something about the NCAA or Black Panther.
Or both.
Or both in one day, as he did. And, you know, there will be maybe some some other small things that come up. They're not particularly vibrant conversations, right? This Isaiah Thomas 13-14 minute scrum is one of the, like, the most fascinating things I've watched in the last 6 months.
It was so weird to me because anytime, because again, I wasn't there when he came back. I got to cover his Christmas event, and then I kind of went to do my other stuff and missed being live at a bunch of these things. And when I would read the things that he said on Twitter or whatnot, I would be like, yeah, I mean, like, that makes sense. But then you see his face and hear the tone, and then you consider how everyone else would feel about this guy who has missed a ton of time, did not play for this team before, and has struggled when he does. And you're just like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. And now he's gone, as are a lot of other guys, obviously. And like you said, the locker room just feels different. Ty feels different. Ty is making jokes. He's being himself, as we heard plenty of times tonight.
Let's just say that if you go and you can, it's been aggregated everywhere now. It's been posted everywhere. Ty Lue had some fun, let's say, with the comments Isaiah made about the Cavs being in panic mode and about a certain play that Hannibal Buress.
That was my favorite.
Okay, so I just want to say I foresaw this Isaiah play where he like stopped dribbling and like threw the and just the really bad turnover. I saw that on Hannibal Buress's Instagram.
Same. Me too.
Like
that was
Adam Pally from Band-Aid, from the movie Band-Aid, and there's a show he's on ABC that's really great, and he's really, really funny. It was like, made a joke about it, and all these comedians are making jokes about it, but I can't believe I saw an NBA highlight on Hannibal Buress' Instagram.
If I could see every highlight commentated by Hannibal Buress, even if he does like the same sort of WTF he did with the Isaiah pass, I think my life would be complete. I love Hannibal Buress and everything that he does, but mostly just the way he speaks.
Yeah.
It was such a fun way to find out about a clearly ridiculous basketball play.
I really, really want like a Vince Staples Hannibal Buress like sports podcast.
That would be
Bill
quality.
Simmons, if you're listening to this, like, pay them the money and put it in the Ringer Podcast Network, please. One downside of this game for the Cavs. Gave up 123 points to the Brooklyn Nets. The Cavs finished the game with a defensive rating of 118.3. That's pretty bad.
Not great.
Not great.
Against a team that's 22 games under 500.
We're not going to litigate this because we don't have the film, and we have, like, it's hard. When you're covering a game live in particular, it's really hard to see how some of this always flows when you're taking notes and all that, and tweeting and everything. But the Cavs attributed some of this to them starting to switch everything. Do you buy that as, like, a reason and part of the reason why the defense was so bad?
I can see it being a reason. LeBron also said that they implemented some new stuff defensively, which maybe a lot of it was switching 1 through 5. I think it makes sense, especially because you might not know exactly where some of these new guys are defensively. I mean, we spoke about Rodney Hood and what he did offensively, but the times I noticed him defensively, there was a sequence in the second quarter where I believe he got beat off the dribble 2-3 times, and it looked like Kenny Atkinson was targeting Rodney Hood defensively. So, I mean, yeah, it makes sense for sure. I think it'll come with time, guys improving and being able to speak to each other. If you're switching everything, I think it becomes fairly obvious within communication. But sure, the other thing too is, I mean, it didn't make up for all 123 points, but the Nets hit some tough shots, man.
Yeah, they really did. D'Angelo Russell had a couple really just gutsy shots.
He had a couple. I think Dante Cunningham had a couple.
Caris LeVert had himself a game.
Caris LeVert had plenty. So, sure. I mean, not to make a ton of excuses, but sometimes the shots just don't fall for you, like the Cavs said. And sometimes they just fall for the other team. Although I feel like if you say it in back-to-back games, there's something to be said for your defense.
Yeah, that excuse only goes so far.
Right. So long.
And like I think this roster still has like a limited defensive potential. Like, it's just not full of like great defenders. Like, I think this team could use like a high end. Like, I think if they had like Luke Mbah-a-Mute or like PJ Tucker, just one guy like that, I think their defense would just feel like, I'd feel a lot more comfortable with their defensive potential.
A guy you could just throw out there to guard a top forward or guard and feel good about it.
Yeah,
and just not feel, where you're running out Jetty Osman and saying he's going to guard the best player,
or like asking Jeff Green to guard James Harden and
sure.
Right, like that. Like that's where they're at. They have Jeff Green and not like one of those other guys. And you know, the Rockets got them, whatever. But That was the one downside of this game. They did win it with that move. And also, just LeBron did not close out on DeMarc Carroll very actively in this game. And LeBron was also the subject to some dunks inside when he just some communication issues and some just general LeBron. Just like, I think there's stuff that I see every game. This game in particular, where I think, okay, in the playoffs, LeBron's probably not just going to, like, overleap this guy. He's actually going to, like, go vertical or, like, make a better attempt of the ball.
Yeah, I think there's always something to be said in the regular season for chill mode.
Yeah.
And
even when he's, like, posting his 12th triple-double of the season.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it's still chill mode for him. And I, especially defensively, I felt the last 2 years that this team, at times, I was like, oh, this is just broken defensively. And then all of a sudden, even just that first game of the postseason hits and you're like, this looks like a completely different unit.
Yeah.
And I know the problems this year for the Cavs have been a lot more tangible. I think they're legitimately worrying, or at least were before. Now you're going to take some time and see how it shakes out. But I still think there's a lot to be said for when LeBron finally turns it on defensively. He's still good defensively, but when that effort is gone, it's going to lead to some leaks. And unless you have all five guys playing defensively, you're going to give up more points than normal, and especially 123 to the Nets. Can't blame it all on LeBron chilling. Can't blame it all on switching one through five. But, I mean, there's some...
It's never one thing.
Yeah, it's never one thing. And it's so hard for me to ever get too upset what this team does defensively, just because I've seen it time and time again where the playoffs start and it looks like a completely different team. But I want to be worried because, again, like I said, all of those worries were tangible and I think more concrete than before. So I don't want to lay it all on, all right, I'm chill. But it's hard for me to get too worked up.
I think once we get closer to the playoffs, I think this West Coast trip will reveal some stuff. I think the Raptors game near the end of March will tell us some more. Toward March 21st at home, it should be a big game. Well, probably the biggest game the rest of the regular season is that Toronto game at home. Two quick things we'll wrap up here. LeBron James, first player in NBA history to have 30,000 points, 8,000 rebounds, 8,000 assists. Also, with his performance tonight, clinched averaging a triple-double for the month of February, and throughout everything that's happened, that happened. And he's the oldest player at age 33 to do that. He got MVP chance. I don't think he's going to win the MVP this year. I think that's just kind of, and it's kind of just complicated with their struggles and everything, but it blows my mind every time, like, I think about how good he just actually is at this age. Like, it's so kind of crazy that he's doing this.
Yeah, and I almost don't even consider the age, because that's a huge part of it. The fact that he's still doing it this long into his career, like, I'm just amazed at how easy it is to take him for granted. Like, I think anytime we do this sort of podcast or, you know, a game recap, if I'm writing something, I feel like it would just be so easy every time to be like, hey, LeBron was really good.
And obviously, every time I do play grades, I'm like, okay, like, yeah, like, he didn't try in defense, but this guy had a triple-double, so, like, he gets an A. Like, I just,
right.
It's just like, he's just insane. Like, there are a few players like this. There's a few guys like this.
It's just the consistency. When I saw 30,000, 8, and 8, I was just like, yeah, he probably did that in 1,000 games. He probably just put up 38 and 8 for 1,000 games straight,
yeah.
And that's how we got here. He's so consistent. I can't imagine where he would be if maybe chill mode wasn't engaged every single regular season for at least the past 5 or 6 for almost 82 games. If he played like he does in the playoffs, all 82 games.
Like, if he had the shorter regular season that allowed him to do that more easily.
Right. That would be fantastic. I think the greatest of all time conversations would be over if that were the case, even without 6 rings. It's hard not to look at myself when I say that and feel recency bias. I didn't get to watch MJ's whole career, but there is no question in my mind, personally, that he is the greatest player to ever play the game. But I feel like I can be objective about LeBron, even though I just said that about him. But I also think he is an incredible person. I look up to him as a person, as a role model. I do think he's the greatest player to ever play the game. I don't ever want to have kids, but I admire him as a father. I think the world of him, and even taking the objectivity out of it as much as I can, because there probably is some subjectivity still in there based on what I just said, I still get goosebumps every time Ahmad hits that from St. Vincent, St. Mary in the starting lineups, because I know I'm about to see greatness, and I don't ever want to take it for granted. I try not to. I probably still do. He's just so damn good, and he's been so damn good for so damn long. I don't ever want it to stop, and it feels like it's not going to. It will. We talked before the game about what we think he's going to do when he retires. And you said, what, 5 years?
Let's say 38.
That's where I would...
Because I can't see him doing like the play to 40 Kobe thing. Or if no. He gets like an injury, I think he would retire.
I think he would love to play with Bronny, but I don't know how realistic that is.
Got to rig the lottery so that happens in Cleveland.
Or you would... I mean, he could set up his contract to be a free agent wherever.
Oh, that would be the summer to tear down NBA Twitter. That would just like explode Twitter. I'll say this: what he had to say about the NCAA, I found just very brutally honest, and I appreciate that honesty. Saying the NCAA is corrupt is pretty factual. And saying that he would have to go to college, they would have had to like pay him money, is basically like very accurate and like good for him. Because like no offense to like people like. I understand people get, like, sanctimonious about college, the integrity of athletics, but...
it's fun.
DeAndre Ayton deserves more than $100,000
right.
to go to Arizona, like pay that guy his money.
That was my favorite take on Markel Fultz, is the only mistake he made is he didn't take enough money.
Yeah.
I agree.
Get paid. Get paid to be good at what you do when they're making money off of you. But last thing, starting lineup was the one lineup I felt, at least, that didn't really flow all that well in this game. You could attribute that to J.R. Tristan. I know a lot of people are blaming Tristan more than J.R. I tend to think it's a J.R. issue more than a Tristan issue. Yes or no, what would you do with the starting lineup? It's not a yes or no question, but would you make a change, and what would that change be?
Can I bring Kevin Love back?
Well, obviously Kevin Love gets back, and Jetty goes to the bench, I assume. Do you put in Hood for J.R.? Do you put in Nance for Thompson? Does that fix it? I think what I would do is just go Nance for J.R., bring JR off the bench. You figure out the bench stuff. And maybe you start Nance too. And maybe he fits better with Love. That's open to debate. And that Love needs to come back with that. But I think if looking at a more short-term thing, I would play Hood. Gives you a little more dynamic playmaking. You can sub him out and put in JR a little bit earlier. And make so Hood's still playing with those bench units. But I think I would start Hood.
I think I would start Hood. I don't have a huge issue with Tristan yet. I still think he adds enough value and soaks up enough minutes with
13 rebounds for him. I know
right.
He's 2-5 from the field.
These
and
last
1-5
two games.
From three, but rebounded well again. I don't think he's as bad as people like to say he is.
Right, and I don't think by saying that you're saying he's out there giving them immense value. But the way
people
tear
him down.
He's
not as good
as
he was like two years ago. But like he's not as bad as people have been saying he is.
Defensively, I think he's slipped, which is an issue. He's never been a great rim protector, but I don't think he's even able to guard guards and switch
out
on guards.
He doesn't do that.
He used to.
I remember during the 16 finals, you could feel comfortable. In 15 finals, people would be like, okay, he switched on Curry. Like, the Cavs can live with that.
Right.
I think right now I'd be scared to death.
Right. That is where I think the issue is.
Saw that against the Nets.
Right. I want Larry Nance, playing more minutes than Tristan at this point.
26 for him this game, for Nance, 22 for Thompson.
And I want Larry Nance finishing games against teams who have, you know, a semi-center on the floor. I think he adds so much with that pick and roll. Teams can't sag off of him in the paint in the same way that they can't sag off Kyle Korver. And I think Larry Nance might be a top two defender, top three defender on this team right now.
And then I think you can make the argument that in the non-LeBron going full go category, he's one or two.
Right.
And if you look at the switching onto guards, he is not technically great at it. Like, his footwork on that is a little choppy, but he puts in the effort and he tries to move, and that's a lot of what you need out of that. Like, he actually goes out there, he puts in the effort to try to move and make sure that there's at least a chance he's staying in front of people. That's a lot of what you need to ask from him.
Stay in front of a guard, and if you can get a turn or two, that's fantastic. And I think, like, yeah, it's the energy. He's going to pick that up. If he's going to play in this system eventually he is going to improve. He's obviously got untapped potential. I don't think
he's playing way more center now than he ever did with the Lakers.
Yes, I think he's gaining a lot by playing with the Cavaliers, with these better players around him, on a team who is gunning for a championship. I think there's more focus on Nance. I think he's way more important to this team than he was in L.A., and I think it's going to benefit him. I want him to finish games unless you need, you know, just a bunch of scorers on the floor. If you're not in the lead, you don't need to play him at the end of games. But I think for the most part, sorry, I don't know how I put that. If you are down, maybe he doesn't need to be on the floor. But if you're ahead, I think I'd like to see him on the floor.
The one thing I'll note is he is sort of foul prone, has a very high foul rate per 36.
Yes.
That's, I think having both him and Tristan would be a big win for the Cavs. And yes, Kevin Love might play some center, but I think you need both Tristan and Ant to play well. And I don't think the discussion around them is one is bad, one is good. I think the discussion is how do you both maximize them both. I think that's sort of the more productive way to look at this. Alex, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, bud. I always love doing this.
Yeah, anytime we run into a game, you're always... And fun fact, this is the 300th episode.
Wow.
So I don't know how I got here, but I've looked
at... You did a lot of podcasts.
It's a lot of podcasts, but 300 episodes. You're the guest on the 300th episode. How does this arbitrary fake milestone make you feel?
I love milestones. I love arbitrary numbers. I would like to say we're the first to 300 for the Locked On Cavs pod.
Yeah.
So we're a part of greatness. Hashtag strive for greatness. And we'll see you at 400.
Live, laugh, hashtag live, laugh, love, or whatever it is. That
yeah,
hashtag.
No, I don't know if I can get on board
one,
with that.
That corny or LeBron one.
For all the gushing I did over LeBron, he's a little corny.
Yeah, and got the Stranger Things very late.
I haven't even watched it.
On that note,
my girlfriend watched it without me.
Oh, that's
I don't
rough.
Have time to go back and watch TV. Like, I don't watch TV by myself. We watch it together or else I don't watch it.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to it.
Watch Justified by yourself. That's my recommendation.
Okay. Timothy my dad and my brother loved it. I loved Timothy.
Do you like Westerns? Do you like crime? Do you like crime stories?
I love crime. I do.
Okay.
I've heard wonderful things about it.
It's great.
You give great recommendations. You've recommended Landline, and
I enjoyed it. Look, you're the one person I think I could have recommended Landline to, and they would have been like, this movie was awesome, because I'm pretty sure most people are like, why did you recommend this weird Jenny Slate indie movie?
I love Jenny Slate. I love indie movies.
Amazon Prime
people.
I love
Jenny Slate.
Yeah, the movie's good. But
watch Landline.
John Turturro in that movie, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it's John Turturro.
John,
great.
Yeah, John Turturro.
Can we get Johnny? Can we get Jenny or Johnny? Can we get Jenny Slate on episode 400?
Yeah, that's the goal. Book Jenny Slate.
If you have to bump me for Jenny Slate, I'll be okay with it.
I know. If I get Jenny Slate to talk about the Cavs and she's like an NBA, like a deep dive stat head, it's gonna be incredible. But that's gonna be it for today's show. Go watch Justified. And at the end of this, you'll hear Jordan Clarkson's post game audio, a very funny Jordan Clarkson post game audio. You can make sure to find Alex on Twitter at Lex Hooper. He's a must-follow, works for 90.23 The Fan. Thursday show will be the mailbag show, so you can submit questions for future mailbags to lockdowncavs@gmail.com. And if you want to support the podcast, please go on iTunes, give it a 5-star rating and review. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. Find the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at LockedOnCavs. Be sure to check out LockedOnNBA, which is now daily Monday through Friday as well. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy this podcast. And again, the Cavs beat the Nets 129-123 as they continue this short little homestand. Next up for them, the Philadelphia 76ers, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid on Thursday at Quicklands Arena. Should be a fun one. Talk to you after that.
Jordan, how good did it feel to knock down that shot a minute ago?
I just feel good to win. You know, first home win. Since we've been in the Cavs jersey, so shot. Just trying to make a play.
But does that kind of shot and Ty going to you in that moment, does that give you more confidence moving forward?
Yeah, I feel like just got the confidence in me to knock those shots. When Kyle's in the game, you know, anybody could have got them shots. Rod Lewis in the game, G Hill. I can be open.
Joe, there were a lack of calls tonight that went you guys' way. How did that? Did you see frustration in your teammates at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's a guy on our team. You know, when you play against him, you're like, man, he get all the calls. But now you're on your team. I think
just told him.
Same exact thing. And he on your team, you like, hey, he really don't get that many calls. I mean, just through everybody, it is what it is. You know, we got to play through it. That's it.
I saw your face when Ty mentioned the accomplishment LeBron had tonight. What goes through your mind?
Great. Nothing like we ain't seen before. You know, I feel like all us young guys growing up, we just seen him since he was in high school. He was on TV ever since then. So just being able to play here, have opportunity to see how actually, you know, how great he is. It's dope too, and that's a great coach.
What have you learned about LeBron since you started playing with him that you might not have known playing against him?
But he cool. He was talking to everybody. He's open.
You have to ever remind yourself that, hey, I'm a pretty good player too. I can remember what I do and not just keep holding back and trying to play too much.
I mean, I don't feel like I got to tell that shit to myself. You know, I feel like I know you're a great player. Gonna make plays for us, but you know, we gotta be there to support him. You know, I gotta knock down shots when he's telling me when I'm open. So, you know, it is what it is.